Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Tom, are you ready for Top Chef season 18?
I am super excited. This is one of the most unique seasons I think we'll ever see on Top Chef. I can't wait to see what happens. And Top Chef alums are back. It's Portland, one of your favorite cities. Oh man, I'm pumped.
This is Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
And I'm Tom Haberstroh.
Tom, we didn't think we'd get it this year. We have. Top Chef is back. Portland, Oregon. I think one of our favorite food cities. Amid a pandemic, they're able to pull off this season. A lot of new chefs from cities where I haven't had the good fortune of dining. So some kind of mystery guests, at least for me. This is exciting. What do we know? What do we want to know? What is going on at Top Chef?
Yeah, so apparently they've been looking at Portland for years as the host city of Top Chef. And for whatever reason, they couldn't make the timing right. And so this year they decided to say, all right, finally, we're going to do Portland. And then The president of the United States sends federal troops to descend upon the city. There are riots happening. There's an Oregon wildfire that smoke engulfed the entire city. And then there's, a pandemic amid all of this. And so a lot of curveballs were thrown their way to do Portland. And they still pulled it off. They taped it in September and October. From what I gather, I was reading a couple articles in the Oregonian and various other places where it was really hard to pull off this season. They had to put the contestants not in a house anymore. They were in a hotel, an undisclosed hotel, where they had the entire hotel blocked off for the contestants. And then they had to redesign the kitchen, Kevin, so to be more social distancing. One of the interesting things that I hadn't considered, but one of the key staples of Top Chef is when Padma and Tom or Gail, During those quick fires, Kevin, they'll walk from station to station and try the food of each chef. But this year, they can't do that because of COVID. So what they've done is they've had all of the chefs, the chef testants, have big, giant chef tables with their own ingredients. They're no longer allowed to share ingredients. And when the quick fires happen, they have to present the dish to the judges' table, which is a semicircle now, extra big to for spacing. And there's no longer that kind of like, hey, what did you have here? And the chefs have their hand behind their back and they do that little pageantry. Now they bring it to the chefs rather than the chefs coming to them. So there are little wrinkles this season. And I just thought they wouldn't be able to pull this off, but apparently they did. Portland is an amazing food city that I haven't been to as much as I'd like. You've probably been there 100 times more than I have, but as a food city, what do you think about them choosing Portland?
Long overdue for a number of reasons, because Portland has always punched above its weight in food, and for a lot of reasons. I mean, one is, you know, this whole food truck movement that we've seen in the last decade, 10, 12 years, Portland was ground zero for that. My favorite food truck in America, Nong's Kanmangai for Hanani's chicken rice right there in Portland. Viking Soul Food, one of my favorite food trucks, also usually works out of Belmont in that area. There's this great place downtown I used to go to after my run, Tom, along the river, called Kingsland Kitchen for English breakfast sandwiches out of a truck. If you were staying downtown, it was great. There's wine country, and I mean like legitimate wine country within an hour of Portland. So look, I think one of the staples of the show is you can sort of change venue. All of a sudden you put the contestants in a sponsored vehicle and you transport them to this new place, whether it's like an oyster hunt or vineyard. And you can do that in Portland. There are a million different topographical options. You could send them camping at breakfast, like without fire. And then by dinner they could be at the vineyards and you still have the city in between. It just was sort of made for that. And not to mention just great, great, great neighborhood cooking in Portland. You draw upon Asian Pacific influences. There's all kinds of stuff. But Portland, along with Atlanta, to me, are sort of the best remaining cities. Or Philadelphia, I guess. We put Philadelphia in that category absolutely as well. They haven't been to Philly, right? We've talked about this. Have they not been to Philly? So Philly, Portland, and Atlanta to me were kind of the best cities in America for Top Chef that have not yet been selected for Top Chef. So they get to knock Portland off the list. Just a ton of great places. I haven't been up there actually in about 3 years. So I'm a little behind. So I think a lot of my brick and mortar favorites, there've probably been some new joints. Some of those older joints might be gone. But it is just like night for night, day for day, once you take care of your food truck, your brick and mortar neighborhood, go out to wine country. Like Portland is just an amazing, amazing venue for Top Chef.
Yeah. And it's Gregory Gordet's home city, right? So he's going to come back. Chef Gregory's coming back to be part of the rotating guest judges that were Top Chef alums, which is the first time ever they're doing this, is instead of having, you know, Emeril Lagasse or whoever it is coming in as the guest judge, they're having the Top Chef alums come through. So Richard Blaze, Carrie Baird, Nina Compton, Tiffany Derry, Melissa King, who won last year's season 17 LA All-Star season, Kristen Kish, Edward Lee, Chef Kwame Onwuachi, Omar Santana, Dale Talday, and Brooke Williamson. So all of these familiar faces are going to be back for season 15. And I'm really excited for Chef Gregory to kind of play host a little bit. He had an amazing run both in his season, I think season 12, and then last season where it was just a back injury, wasn't able to perform at the top of his game. And now he comes back and it's kind of, he gets to play host. He opened up his own restaurant. Remember he debuted, or at least the concept of it was at Restaurant Wars back in season 17. Khan is open in Portland as of December. And so that's really cool, is that he has his own restaurant. And we get to see Portlandia stars, Fred Armisen, Kerry Brownstein. Fred Armisen had a line where he says, pack your dives a little too early. In the trailer, we saw this. I think we got to clip that for our show, is Fred Armisen saying, pack your dives. It's amazing. So I'm excited about the season. I have to like text my Portland folks, like Coop Moorhead. I want to text him and see about all these different spots that they hit up. Hood River, Fruit Loop, Columbia River Gorge, Mount Hood Territory, Tillamook Bay, Tualatin Valley, and Willamette Valley in Wine Country. All of those things I've never been to. So Kevin, like of those names, anything that bounce off the page there?
Yeah, Willamette Valley in that area, sort of southwest of Portland. Again, it is like Portland Pinots, or rather Portland Pinots, Oregon Pinots are just, I mean, this is great, great wine country. And again, what's so nice about it is it's so close. I believe it's Yamhill County, where so many of these places, you kind of get to Newburgh, and then you kind of go. It's a beautiful, beautiful wine trail. And yeah, there's just so many of these biodynamic vineyards. It's you're going to enjoy this because, and my only sadness is that like we couldn't con the good people at Bravo and Top Chef to kind of letting us kind of smuggle ourselves in for Restaurant Wars or one of these vineyard you're cooking for 150. I guess we're not going to have those sort of nice food fairs and hey, here are a bunch of 150 people coming around. You're giving them each plates. And I mean, I'm actually really curious to see how they do handle this and whether, because look, we know the competition will be great. We know we're going to see great chefs, great food. We'll get a little drama. We'll argue. We'll have our takes. It's going to be interesting to see to what extent we feel like things are missing because you don't have those 150 people at a garden party kind of rubbing shoulders and schmoozing and getting right up into to the chef and those conversations. And those are things you take for granted as conventions of Top Chef that you don't imagine not having. And by virtue of not having them, like, what is that going to do to the actual production and the product on the screen?
Yeah, I'm wondering, like, that's a great point. Like, when they do those, oh, you have to serve 150 plates. Are they going to still do that if they're not 150 people to serve?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. Like, how do you, like, you lose out on a couple of different of your kind of your tried and true challenges, right? And you know, they're always repat, right? It's like, oh, you're going to do 150 firemen or 150 hungry college basketball fans, right? Like you always, they vary in context, but the general parameters of the challenges are always the same, which is lots of people. One of the things you love about those sort of 150 people, you each have your own little table putting out your little paper plate thing, is that like there's a hecticness. Like you feel the chefs feeling the pressure of there just being a ton of people that they've got to serve, lines piling up at this site. Like that is, there are not so much later in the seasons, but I do feel like early in a lot of these seasons, so much of the pressure and drama on the contestants can be summed up by saying tons of people waiting in line in close quarters for your food. Can you get that food out before they get restless? And I think that's sort of my question.
Yeah. And I did read that they are going to do a new wrinkle for Restaurant Wars. There's always a new wrinkle in Restaurant Wars, but this year especially is going to have to be different because you're not bringing in restaurant customers, right? So you have to come up with a different conceit, which will be interesting. They are bringing back, thank God, they're bringing back Last Chance Kitchen, which has become like our favorite little amuse-bouche of this show. I love that. Tom Colicchio is going to continue doing that. What they aren't going to do, it seems like, they're not bringing back former contestants to compete on the show. So there's no kind of like Last Chance Kitchen losers bracket that moves into the competition later with, former Top Chef contestants. So this is a new crop of chef testants, completely new. There's no alumni in this group. There's 15 chef testants and we both have scouted them. And I mean, why don't we just go through it? Contestant by contestant, what we know, what we don't know, and I have some stats here and some notes, but yeah, let's run through some of these contestants.
It's interesting. I kind of did a quick perusal of the names, trying to kind of figure out, hey, like, is there a pecking order? How can we evaluate? It's interesting. Of the 15 contestants, 5 have Beard Award nominations to their name. Starting with the first name on the list, Brittany Anderson in Richmond, Virginia. By the way, one of the things I really like about this season, at least from my standpoint, is it's fun to kind of know chefs and have been to their restaurants. It's also fun to have chefs in cities that I have absolutely no frame of reference. I've heard really good things about Richmond in the last few years. Don't know any, haven't been. And I know there's like a cool restaurant scene close in. Mm-hmm, and she is one of the tent poles, Brittany Anderson, one of the tent poles of that Richmond scene, right? A 2-time semifinalist, apparently has like the modern German restaurant. Tom, we're talking schnitzel, we're talking beer brine pork chop. This is Brittany Anderson from Metzger Bar and Butchery, and which I believe, if you were listening to this show, reopens on Friday, March 26th. We were recording this show the day before. If you were listening to it, that means that in Richmond, Brittany Anderson is rolling it back out. Metzger Bar and Butchery due to open. So like, she's kind of an interesting sort of portrait of kind of one of the sort of 5 Beard Award nominees who are going to be in this field of 15.
Yeah, because you want both a mix of accomplished chefs that have their own restaurant that are 2-time James Beard Award nominees, but you also want the kind of the prospects, the gems, the diamonds in the rough, where they just explode when they come onto the scene because they haven't gotten their opportunity yet. So she's definitely more, I think, in this group, she's more of a blue chip stock here, is that she's got a pedigree. She worked in New York. She's got, you know, the James Beard Award background. I think she is, on this group, definitely some of the most accomplished of the chefs.
You want to go in alphabetical order? You want to poke around? Go. What do you want to do? The next alphabetically, Avishar Barua has one of my favorite profiles because, and you will appreciate this, Tom, one of his claim to fame is that he did his own take on the Taco Bell cheesy gordita crunch at his joint in Columbus. He's Bangladeshi American, and this dish is supposedly just kind of like one of the great hangover. It's the cheesy brisket crunch. That's his take. Is one of the great hangover dishes in America, Tom. The cheesy brisket crunch, paying homage to the gordita at Taco Bell, which I have never consumed, you might have from your college days. I don't know.
But so that gordita sort of crunch was an off menu item when I was in college.
Really off menu?
I would go to, at the time, the cheesy gordita crunch was actually off menu. So they had it for a while and then it was off menu. And I shit you not, I would go through the drive through and be like, I'll have the cheesy gordita crunch. I know it's off menu, but I was wondering if you guys could do it. And they always did it for me. And it was just kind of like the idea that you were like insidery at Taco Bell and that they had this like secret menu. It was just thrilling. It's the stupidest thing in the world. But this Avishar, I'm giving away too much of my draft board right now. But the fact that he not only has this amazing hangover food, the cheesy brisket crunch, he also trained under Wiley Dufresne at WD-50. So mm-hmm. I know he's super geeky and, one of these chemistry, biology, brain chefs. So there's a lot going for Avishar.
And distillery. He opened a distillery, Tom.
Oh, come on.
This is your kind of guy.
Come on.
This is a man after your heart. Gorditas, WD-50, and a distillery.
I mean, it's going to be tough to not draft.
I might have to hoard and trade here. I mean, this is you are giving a bit away. Another one of the Beard nominee chefs is Don Burrell from Houston. I did not make it to Culture, which is in this kind of cool complex in downtown Houston, but she was nominated Best Chef Texas. I think you and I both have an extremely soft spot for modern kind of modern Southern, which was sort of the the calling card there. And even more so, she is from the coaching tree of Tyson Cole. We're talking about the Uchi Empire in Texas. You've probably been to Uchiko in Austin or Uchi. I've been several times. So she came through that sort of that Tyler Cole coaching tree and got herself a Best Chef Texas nomination. And you know, I don't know. I think Culture might have closed during the pandemic, but at any rate, she is another force to be reckoned with as we sort of size up the field.
I mean, Kevin, you bury the lead here.
What's
she
the lead?
She fucking competed in the Olympics. She was an Olympic track.
She's an Olympian?
She's an Olympian. She represented the United States in the long jump in the 2000 Sydney Olympics. And she's a chef. So back to back, Kevin, these contestants are on fire. Don Burrell comes from a family of like Olympians, like track stars. And she, when she wrapped up her track and field career, she decided to become a chef. And so she's not only just one of the best chefs in the world, she's also one of the best athletes in the world, which is super cool.
Right. So if they do like the steeplechase challenge, like quick fire challenge, she will win that.
I mean, if it's a larger kitchen because they're trying to be COVID friendly here or COVID social distancing, maybe that speed is going to help her in the competition, Kevin. That's, I'm just saying.
Speaking of, you know, pedigrees, so the next contestant is Gabe Arales, who worked at NOMA in Copenhagen, which, as you know, sort of in the foraging movement was sort of there was a time where NOMA was the hardest reservation in the world and probably the most celebrated restaurant in the world. I'd say about 8, 9, 10 years ago, possibly. And he comes through that. El Paso guy also kind of participated in the Austin scene. His restaurant was named by Texas Monthly Best New Restaurant. And Texas Monthly, we talk about kind of periodicals, regional periodicals that know what the hell they're talking about in the food scene. First and foremost is Texas Monthly. I imagine you have read their Best Barbecue of Texas. I think it's every 2 years, I believe they put it out, which is a contemporary Bible, Tom, for those on a barbecue trail in Texas, which I have used. I had a thumbed up copy when I went my first barbecue trip back in, I think, 06 to Texas, kind of roaming around Central Texas. So he comes from that scene and like, again, a combination of kind of regional dedication with, oh, by the way, I did prime myself at one of the most notable restaurants in the world.
Yeah, apparently there's two chefs on here that used to ply their trade at NOMA. So, man, he's as far as this season of contestants goes, he's one of the most popular chefs that we have on social media, on Instagram. He has 7,000 followers on Instagram, which is the second highest number on this crew. I actually looked this up for all the contestants because I decided to follow all of them on the Pack Your Knives Instagram feed, which is at Pack Your Knives on Instagram. Go follow. And he has the
You are
second
such
highest
a social media account. Whore. I'm not even like, I'm locked on Instagram.
Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, Noodle. Hey, boy. How you doing? And Noodle's just like,
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise, but maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
Yeah, but
denying my pictures of my puppy to the world at large.
Yeah, you can't deny Howard to the world. I mean, come on. So Gabe comes with a lot of prestige coming into this competition. We're not talking Bruce Coleman kind of prestige, but he does have this bio that is quite impressive. Next one is Nelson Herman.
Oakland, California, back with a representative. You know, again, guy whose pedigree reads like a who's who of New York, where he grew up, moved out to the Bay, where he's doing really good work at an Afro Latino cocktail lounge is what his joint in Oakland is characterized as, Alomar Kitchen. So this will be really interesting to see. I think one of the things that the show's done really well is allowed chefs to kind of showcase their heritage, their influences, whether from childhood, from family, from lineage. And it's something we've seen a lot more in the last 3 to 4 seasons than we did in the first 10 seasons of the show. So this will be really interesting. But again, Gramercy Park Hotel, Citarella, which actually was like the first time I ever went to a real fish market. In New York, like a real store where you get like the real stuff. It was on the Upper West Side when I was going to college there. So yeah, this will be interesting to watch him as well.
Yeah, well, one little note on him is when I went to Alomar on Instagram, I know it's a really good restaurant because Mark Spears, our friend who covers the NBA, Mark Spears already follows Alomar, so right, it's got to be good if Mark Spears is on it.
He's got the Mark Spears seal of approval. You know it's good. Who is next, Tom?
Byron Gomez. Byron Gomez is a chef from Aspen. And if you thought that he might have served...
No one is from Aspen. Where is he from?
Oh, I'm not quite sure where he's from. I guess he hails from
Long
Aspen.
Island.
He's a chef in Aspen. But the underlying thing here is this guy has probably served Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, any sort of billionaire, he's probably served them because his work, he hails from the Hamptons and Aspen, where his work has preceded the show. He has worked at the Hamptons and Aspen. So I'd imagine he has served the most expensive plates that any of these contestants have served.
Yeah, and it's I think in terms of per capita income of or median income of diner, he will lead the league in that category, having worked in the Hamptons, as you said, and Aspen, indeed.
He's from Costa Rica. He worked under I don't know if he worked under Daniel Bula, but I think he's going to be a real force on this season. He runs 7908 in Aspen. We'll see what he does when, you know, he's serving up dishes to Padma and Tom and Gail. But yeah, exciting competitor here in Byron Gomez.
Yeah. So then we have we now have
Sasha Grumman. Grumman,
yeah, who is in Houston. By the way, I'm really excited to see Houston kind of make a real charge. I think Houston is one of the, it might be the most underrated culinary capital in America. The number of insane meals I had there in a 5-day period. I'm talking about Nancy's Hustle, Theodore Rex, Kokoro, which is this little sushi counter in this little food hall. There is amazing Vietnamese food in Houston. So I'm kind of glad that it's starting to get recognized. I think Austin has always been the place people sort of, you know, go in terms of thinking about food and the movement in Texas. But to me, I think Houston is just insanely good. She also worked with Tom, one of our old friends, friend of the podcast, a restaurant you and I had one of our better meals together at a couple of years ago, Union, with Bruce Kalman. She worked there.
Yeah, so I always like these kind of top chef trees, and the fact that she's worked under Bruce, and she's a Sicilian background. She's got a lot of Italian influence here, and if she worked at Union, man, she's got my seal of approval too. So Sasha is definitely a heavyweight here in the competition. And I was wondering, of all the 28 markets in the NBA, Houston, would you say is the most underrated food city?
I think Houston's insanely good. I think it is so underrated. I didn't even get to half the places on my list. And we're not just talking about kind of, downtown, destination joints. I mean, there are these great neighborhood places that have popped up. There's some of the best Vietnamese food in America in Houston. Harris County, I think next to Queens in Los Angeles County, is like the most ethnically diverse county in America. And so, you go a little further out, there is amazing Indo-Pakistani food. Like there is just like the entire city. And then you also get kind of great American classics. It's Houston, right? And rents are relatively cheap commercially in Houston, which is another issue. And you and I have talked about it. We talked about it with Jen Carroll in Philadelphia, right? That one of the things that's happened in this country is it is too expensive in San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles and Boston, et cetera, for young chefs, but it is not too expensive to open your own, hang your own shingle and open your own joint in a place like Houston or Atlanta or Philadelphia or Milwaukee for that matter. And I think Houston has been the greatest beneficiary because when you combine, sort of, again, the composition of the county, the rents, it's a Sunbelt city. Produce is more of it's just everything about it is amazing, and I'm really excited to see Houston get some representation. I'm a honk now for Houston. Next contestant, one of my favorite profiles is Roscoe Hall, who is in Birmingham, Alabama. And look, talk about this lineage, Tom.
Yeah,
you grow up under Alice Waters at Chez Panisse out in the Bay. Before you kind of move over to, by the way, I think I had a cup of coffee in Portland and then goes to work at Mama Fuku Sambar in New York City. By the way, Tom, I don't know if you're looking for like potentially a, next time you do you have folks over when this thing is all over, a Super Bowl party. The Mama Fuku Sam recipe is available in the New York Times. It is so amazingly easy once you get yourself an 8 or 9 pound pork shoulder But you can do it. It just requires some time and a big hunk of pork. But I will tell you that Mamafuku Sam is something you should be cooking for friends and family at the next time you need to prepare food for 15 or 20. And it is so easily doable. But my favorite Roscoe Hall resume item is he was the executive chef at Rodney Scott's Barbecue, which is in Charleston, South Carolina, but I didn't realize they had a Birmingham, Alabama location. And Tom, Rodney Scott's Barbecue will blow your mind. It is just honestly one of the five best barbecues in the country right now. You go there for the whole hard barbecue, Tom, but do not sleep on the spare ribs.
Oh, yeah. I am not sleeping on the spare ribs. I am awake on the spare ribs. Roscoe, first of all, the name Roscoe is amazing. And Hall is my wife's maiden name. So I'm like, just reading
your family.
His name.
Your family.
We're basically family. And he's an artist too. Come on. This guy is a rock star. So Roscoe Hall, big fan. He's going to be, a cult hero of this show.
Yeah, I mean, but come on. I mean, Shea Panisse, Mamafuku, and Rodney Scott. Like the coolest back of a baseball card you have ever seen, Tom, in terms of pedigree. Like, I am all in on his candidacy. Sarah Howman's also got a totally different, but I think equally interesting pedigree. She is one of the Beard nominees of the 5 of the 15. Semi-finalist for Rising Chef both in 16 and 17. She was working in San Francisco for Brandon Jew, who I believe we've seen on Top Chef kind of make an appearance. You'll have to go check my facts. But, was really coming up in the San Francisco scene and then kind of decided to do something really interesting, Tom, which is she's now the head chef at Soder Vineyards in Carlton, Oregon. And Carlton is exactly like in the Yamhill County area I was talking about. They do some kick-ass Pinots that you can order online. Actually, my favorite online wine place, not a sponsor, so I'm just doing this out of the kindness of my heart. JJ Buckley in Oakland, California is the best place to order wines online in America. I love my guys there.
If they want a sponsor, I'm open to it.
Yeah, and by the way, I will call the gang there because, we would love for you to sponsor, but it's a place that actually carries Soder wines. Tom, Oregon Pinot has been one of my – we're going to talk about it later in one of the later episodes. I'm sure there will be an Oregon wine episode, if not multiple ones, but like this was the quarantine, Tom, was the year of Oregon Pinot in my house. And I'm really excited that we have executive chef at one of the kind of more prolific Pinot producers in Oregon. And I also think it's kind of cool. Like you're in the restaurant scene in San Fran and you're like, screw it. You know what I want to do? I want to go to be an executive chef at Soder Vineyards, which has just sort of a beautiful ranch less than an hour from Portland that does beautiful food and wine. And I think the pace is probably a little different. And you are probably cooking with some mucky mucks, but that to me is a really interesting profile.
It is. And all I read in her profile was Michelin star, Michelin star, Michelin star, Michelin star. I mean, she's got an amazing back of the baseball card, like you said. And also she's from Portland, or she's cooking in Portland. So I almost feel like in normal seasons, the pressure of the hometown hero in Top Chef might be a little bit heavy because you're out in the scene, you're out and about at your favorite restaurants, and you're face to face with some iconic people in your city. But this year might be a little bit different. I think that weight is a little bit lighter because it's kind of in a COVID bubble. You're not having to go interface with some of those, local pillars. And so I kind of feel like Sarah Howman is going to have a deep run in this show, not just because of the, she's from Portland, but I feel like the winery background is really going to serve her well in this competition. So yeah, Sarah and also a really interesting chef test in here.
Who's next, Tom?
Kiki Lua from Detroit. Comes from Congolese immigrants, and it was named by the New York Times as one of the 16 black chefs changing America. Holy shit. Yeah, this is a big get for Top Chef.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting. She has a fascinating story. I mean, really kind of got a bedrock member of sort of the Detroit culinary renaissance in the last few years. There's some actually great places I hear in Detroit. Was excited to get there this year for a story. Obviously didn't. But actually, I think has walked, sort of moved back from some of her places in Detroit to really kind of apply herself on kind of equity issues like, you know, coming up with more sustainable wage models in restaurants, like figuring out, hey, how can restaurants sort of, you know, take care of their wage earners in the kitchen, back of the house, et cetera. This is a real movement that predates COVID and kind of just economic justice within restaurants. Her restaurants in Detroit were really hyper local in the sense that, I mean, this stuff was farmed in the neighborhoods. I mean, just, you know, sort of local kind of urban farming as a bedrock part of that movement. And I think now is actually kind of is instructing younger chefs, younger entrepreneurs, and sort of how to do this if you want to get in the restaurant business, that these other considerations. So it's going to be really interesting. Just again, and I love the idea and love that we could see some Central African cooking in the show. You know, when Top Chef, again, always does a really good job of sort of demanding and insisting that chefs kind of draw on personal experience, on background, on memory. One of my favorite things about the show. So he could be a really interesting contestant, and kind of excited to hear more about that. Maria Mazzone in Tucson, Arizona, another place that I would love to eat, have not eaten. Another James Beard semifinalist for Best Chef Southwest. The tacos, Eric at Boca. Eric, I called you. Tom, listen to you. I called you by my partner's name. This is what happens when you live with only one person.
I feel very honored.
Tom, considered a compliment. Tom, Boca Tacos and Tequila, which is her joint in Tucson. Just look at some of those tacos. Really interesting. So kind of excited to have a taco. I'm not a tequila guy, though. I've never been able to get tequila down. Where are you on I find that tequila is one of the more polarizing substances in the kitchen.
I'm very much warming up to tequila. It used to be just the worst shot at the bar or at the end of a long night. But that was shitty tequila. Like the Jose Cuervo Gold is just shitty tequila. Nowadays, you drink some tequila on ice, like good tequila, it is good. And the hangovers aren't worse. Like you can have like one or two without hurting yourself the next day. So as a dad, I appreciate that. It's just when the kids are yelling at 6 a.m, it actually is counterintuitive thinking that tequila is actually not a bad hangover. But really, it's true.
I mean, tequila and its crazy cousin mezcal just have never been my bag. But I got to tell you, like I'm imagining the mole de pollo, the sort of the mole poblano chicken taco with sesame seeds sounds really good at her place. You got a little surf and turf, the mari tierra, steak and beer battered shrimp. I mean, there is, and a classic Sonoran kind of Phoenix Tucson thing, the bacon wrapped hot dog taco. Which we need to engage on this. We will hopefully get some of these chefs on our air. But when we talk to Maria, I want the entire backstory for the bacon wrapped hot dog taco. So
yeah, you're talking about Momofuku's Sam recipe, and I'm like, man, what about her recipe for the bacon wrapped hot dog taco? I could do that at home as well.
Another James Beard nominee, out of Seattle. Shota Nakajima has two places in Seattle. The first is Taku, which is essentially, this is sort of Osaka style eating. It's like, it's basically fried stuff on sticks, kushukatsu. Mm. And that is the place, that it is one of his famed places in Seattle. I have not been, because I haven't been to Seattle since 2015. They need an NBA team. Let's get them an NBA team. In sort of the kushukatsu joint, and then Adana, which I believe closed during the pandemic, but he does Japanese comfort food. This is right in my wheelhouse.
I mean, come on,
nothing's better. The only thing better than comfort food is Japanese food, and when you combine it too for Japanese comfort food, you're winning. So that's where he is. He comes from Seattle, so he's kind of in the regional Pacific Northwest regional, and excited to see him cook.
Yeah, I mean, the James Beard Award winning background, the fact that he's regionally, locally from Seattle, cooking there. And then he, of all of the chefs that I followed on the Pack Your Knives Instagram feed, He had the highest following. So he might be the most famous if you're using that as a proxy, which is probably a messy proxy, but 9,830 followers as of this typing. Chef Shota is the biggest name on this list in terms of Instagram standing. So he's got, I mean, he's a juggernaut here, not just from the more traditional award department, but also just, I think a lot of people like him. So Chef Nakajima is a big deal for this crew. So next one is another Gabriel Pascuzzi.
Tom, I have a sandwich for you from his famed, and this is one of the most heralded sandwich shops in America, the Stacked Sandwich Shop. I picked one out for you. This is on the seasonal menu. It's the Polpetta. Pork and veal meatballs, spicy tomato sauce, Parmesan, provolone, truffle pecorino on a toasted hoagie. Tom Avershow, is that a sandwich created in a laboratory for you?
I just passed out. What'd you say?
I mean, and by the way, I got a second one for you. See, I don't eat red meat anymore. This is the problem with me. I got another one for you.
That's fine.
Oxtail French
all over the filet.
Dip.
Yes.
Tom, the oxtail French dip, which is braised oxtail, cast iron charred onions and cremini mushrooms, Havarti cheese, rosemary jus on a toasted hoagie. I'm having the smoked turkey Reuben myself, but I mean the portobello banh mi.
I feel like some of my happiest moments with you is eating oxtail.
Listen, if you come back out to Los Angeles, you and Allison, I will go and make and eat oxtails. We will braise them all day, all after. We'll braise them for like 7 hours. And we will go on a hike and we will come home and we'll eat braised oxtails because you do love my braised oxtails. And I'm proud that you love my braised oxtails. But yeah, his sandwich shop is, I mean, it is one of the top sandwich shops in America. And he was Eater's Portland Chef of the Year. That is no small thing. Really, really, really eclectic chef who can cook high, can cook low. And apparently worked at Colicchio and Sons.
Ooh,
so is the fix in,
minute.
Tom?
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know. Does Tom have to recuse himself?
Yeah. I mean, he has a conflict of interest here. Yeah. This has happened on the show quite a bit. And this is one of the things that I would like to know. Like Pascuzzi's representation on this show in two ways requires more research. I want to know. And maybe we can get that from our favorite Top Chef stats proprietor. I would love to know if hometown chefs fare better than worse than average.
You'll have to get on that and we have friends in the Top Chef stat community who can run this for us. That's a very good question. Is there a home counter advantage?
I wonder about that. The other thing I want to know is, does Tom Colicchio, if you know Tom Colicchio's or worked for him, is that bias going to hurt you or is that actually an advantage? So Gabriel, he's also from, he also worked at Noma. So not only did Gabe work at Noma, but I believe Gabriel did as well. So we have got a couple contestants here who worked at probably one of the top 10 most prestigious restaurants in the world. So Gabriel Pascuzzi with Mama Bird and with Stack, he's awesome. And he is the second of two chefs who hail from Portland. So he's got the hometown thing going as well. Next one is Jamie Tran from Las Vegas, Eater's Chef and Restaurant of the Year for I think 2017 or recently. Man, that is an impressive resume in Las Vegas. As we know, I've been on the show, Las Vegas has a lot of incredible restaurants.
Yeah, and it's also really interesting because I think it was about 10 to 15 years ago that people realized that like a lot of the best eating in Vegas, you know, outside of the celebrity chef joints on the Strip, was like along Spring Mountain Road when you get west of kind of the Strip. And we all discovered great places there. I think you and I have been to Raku and other places that have really been heralded. What's interesting about her joint is it's not even out Spring Mountain. It is in the far southwest on the other side of the Beltway. And it is very casual. It is called the Black Sheep. And as you said, to win that in a city where there is celebrity cooking, where there are some tried and true places along Spring Mountain, and to open up a little casual joint doing Vietnamese and winning essentially restaurant of the year, that is a lot. And Tom, I mean, I looked at the menu, and for you, I have picked out the braised Duroc pork that looks absolutely delicious. But I just think this is sort of a testimony to Vegas and the fact that you don't have to go to a signature hotel anymore. You could eat, you could never step foot on the strip in Vegas for a month and have great food everywhere. It's just it's a place that is just tremendous in terms of options. And again, like the fact that this is like a casual, affordable joint and she made it work. It's just much respect there.
And because I'm an Instagram whore, I have to note she's the least followed account of all the contestants on Instagram, but sure.
A woman after my own heart.
She's got quite the resume here. So I think that following, that social following, whatever that means, I mean, she's got an incredible resume and she's from Vegas. So I kind of feel like when you're on Top Chef, you have to have that ability to not be starstruck when a celebrity chef comes into the room. And I kind of feel like if you're a chef in Las Vegas, like you've seen them all just by rubbing shoulders and being part of the food scene there. Don't think she's going to be starstruck at all about this competition. Last but not least, Chris, I'm going to butcher this name, Viud? Chris Viud from Milford, New Hampshire, a New Englander after my own heart.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're far New England is being represented out in the West Regional. This is very good. A baker, which as we know, has its real advantage, a guy who just, is just when it comes to breads, pastries, top of his game. We've talked about the sort of like we've seen in recent seasons that baking definitely, you know, it allows you to do the dessert, which nobody wants to do in Restaurant Wars. You know, it affords you niches in important team competitions. And if you know how to do it, it is almost an instant pass to the next round. And the truth is in a restaurant field, in a Top Chef field, very few chefs want to be saddled with baking. And I think I was thinking about this when I read Chris's bio, I was like, this is a market inefficiency in the Top Chef game, Tom.
Totally agree with you. And he's got a Top Chef pedigree working with Adrian Mosier in Boston, Chef Brian Young, our guy who hosted in Lexington, Kentucky, who was the host of our table and brought over our dishes and all around great guy, Brian Young, also one of his pals in Boston there. So the Boston provincial, like the tree is very strong here with Chris, Chef Chris. And I'm always curious. I would love to talk to some of the, I don't know if there's a Top Chef casting director, just kind of like how much those trees matter. Is Brian Young and Chef Adrian were on the same season, and one of their closest pals, Chris, is on this season. So I really like to see the New England representation here. And as he's the last chef of the 15, Kevin, I wanted to point out, we don't have an LA-based chef or a New York-based chef or a Miami-based chef. So what do you make of that?
I mean, what I make of it is that like this country, you can go just about anywhere now and have almost a week full of good meals. And it is no longer the case where these food capitals have a monopoly on talent. And in fact, there's great appeal into going to these places. You get to actually get creative chefs who, again, could not afford otherwise to do this. You know, you can have talented chefs in New Hampshire doing, you know, fantastic food. And by the way, I am on the Greenleaf Milford site right now, and I'm ready to book a table, Tom.
Wow. Yeah.
And so I think that's sort of the thing is, why not? I mean, why, you don't have to recruit from Los Angeles when there are great chefs in Tucson. You don't have to go to Boston if you've got a chef in Milford, New Hampshire nearby. I mean, you can do this. And I just think it's one of the cooler things about traveling domestically now I mean, hell, I mean, I've had a great meal in Fargo, North Dakota. I've had, like, there are people doing cool things with food. And I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, I want to talk about more of this with guest chefs. Like what happened in the last 15 years? Is it just that people started caring about local ingredients? Is it that, hey, the internet gave you access as a young chef in a place where you might not otherwise have gotten exposure to the greats, where you could absorb? I mean, it's a really interesting question. Like, what happened so that you and I are having some of our best meals in the country in suburban Hartford or Indianapolis or wherever it is?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really being that through line is being represented in this season of Top Chef. So, season 18, the preview is done. Next episode, we're going to break down the first episode, the season premiere, April 1st. And then we're going to do our draft. So I kind of have a sense of what your big board looks like, Kevin. I've been making notes here.
Oh, really? Because I don't have a sense of what my big board looks like yet.
But you know, it could change after the first episode. I'm just taking notes and reading the tea leaves here a little bit. And I have a sense of some of your favorites and some of the ones that you're like, all right, next contestant. So we're going to watch the first episode. We're going to recap the first episode and do our annual draft of chef testants. I'm so excited for Top Chef to be back. If you haven't listened already, go back. We revisited Top Chef Las Vegas season 6 with the Voltagios, with just a stacked group, Chef Jed Carroll, Chef Gillespie, all of those folks in season 6, Las Vegas. Go listen to that because we recapped every episode. We did a rewatch. It was super fun. And now we get a fresh batch of Top Chef season 18. What happens in a pandemic for Top Chef? We're about to find out with a lot of Top Chef alums coming back. I am super excited, Kevin.
Tom, looking forward to it. You go prepare my big board for me. And we will reconvene after the April 1st premiere. For Tom Haberstroh, this is Kevin Arnovitz, and this is Pack Your Knives.